composer Randy Weston, with Talib Kibwe on alto sax and Jamil Nasser on bass, with JK's Blues. It's from his 1993 album, Volcano Blues, a collaboration with arranger Melba Liston. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And, oh my goodness, where are we going? Where are we going? This was a weekend of funerals. Funerals of black men, and in one case, a 13-year-old boy shot and killed by police. And there are more funerals to come, also of victims of police killings. President Obama's imminent departure from office after 8 years will be marked, no doubt, with much pomp and circumstance. He'll recite a long laundry list of his administration's accomplishments, and he'll point also to high priority items that the clock somehow ran out on. Things will be on that list. The clock would have run out on how to deal and how to solve this matter of police killings. The rate of police killings has not gone down, and the spate of recent police killings points up not only the persistence of the problem, but an apparent inability to solve it. And as he shuts the door and curates his legacy, he will be shutting the door also on reforms that were promised during his 8 years in office. I want to talk about that because we have given this president so much slack, so much slack. All kinds of reasons, and some of them are quite understandable. But in the meantime, the president and his administration haven't done the job. And he will soon, as I said, he will soon close the door. He's out. He would have been preceded by none other than the highest law enforcement official in the land, Eric Holder, the head of the Department of Justice, who checked out and left us with a report. He had one foot out the door, filed this report saying that essentially the situation in Ferguson, Missouri must get better. You think so? But at the same time that he said that, he also said that the Justice Department, his department, could find no reason really to proceed with a prosecution of the killing of Michael Brown because the standards are so high. And as you know, when Michael Brown was killed, the local district attorney also failed to secure an indictment there in that case. That's on one hand. The other hand was that all of the acolytes, the Democratic acolytes that are called into action, the Sharptons of the world, the Al Sharptons of the world, mysteriously, what they were calling for was an investigation They want an investigation. But nobody had filed any papers saying that they were more serious about this than just calling for things. You don't get what you want by saying, pretty, 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 please. Could we have an investigation? I remarked about it repeatedly that in that case, we did not see any paperwork. We didn't see any paperwork at all suggesting that this case was to be taken seriously and that the immediate objective, instant objective, was the appointment of a special prosecutor, since the local effort was failing and had failed, the state effort had failed, and so we had to have a special prosecutor in this case. The acolytes, the surrogates for the Democratic Party, the Sharptons of the world and others, decided that they would avoid that. That's not why they were sent there. And you may recall that the people of Ferguson, Missouri, at one point literally chased Sharpton and Jesse Jackson out of town. They spotted them for the roles that they came there to play. As a very nasty underside to all of this tragedy, you would think that the awful circumstances under which these people have been killed would be enough grief. But then you also have to deal with the vultures who come into play in behalf of a system, which is exactly what the Sharptons and others did. They come in to deflect things, to keep a cap on a community justifiably upset and outraged. And in turn, this becomes their political currency with the people that they are flacking for. See, I delivered. I kept everything peaceful. They're under control. You can now bring in your tanks and your smoke bombs and everything else, which is also part of President Obama's gift and his part of his plan on police reform. Part of the plan for police reform is to absolutely increase the militarization of police, to increase the state presence and control, that is to say, the suspension of your rights. When you have a state of emergency declared, in effect, you have the total suspension of rights. You have no rights. And it has been applied time and again under this president, especially to black communities, and especially to black communities reacting to police killings. In fact, the governor of the state of Missouri had called a state of emergency even before there was a state of emergency. Had the martial law in place, had National Guard, all these military types in place, even before he declared a state of emergency. Had tanks, as you remember seeing, high-powered weapons, snipers, all of the above. And who did the work? When all of this was going on, Sharpton didn't do it. Jesse Jackson didn't do it. The lawyers for the family didn't do it. It was the ACLU of Missouri. They came in to represent all of those people whose rights were abridged simply because they were demonstrating. They were the ones in court. They were the ones filing the papers, challenging the state's autocratic authority. Not these people running around talking that jibber-jabber out of their mouths. The ACLU did the work. President Obama's administration has utterly failed. And this is a singular problem, this issue of police killings. It was put on the board before he even came into office, and the expectation was that he would do something about it. Well, finally, and thank goodness, this is how sick it is. Thank goodness for Eric Garner being shot dead. Because that gave the administration the opportunity, a media opportunity, to say, well, now we have a problem on our hands, and I'm going to respond to it. So the president is now seeing, this is all being managed as a public relations thing. The president gets to be seen as being proactive. So he calls together a group of people, and he, by executive order, appoints a task force. And they did a fantastic job, I would say, given the fact that he gave them 90 days to come up with a plan, a comprehensive plan. First of all, you know how insane that is. To ask people to solve or come up with plans in 90 days, but okay, they did it. I talked about this report, which went nowhere. And many more people, many more black women and men were killed by police. And they didn't have to be killed. Which means that the president did not regard this as an urgent matter. Nor did he regard this as a specially urgent matter, considering this was applicable to an African-American community, the same community that did everything in its power to see to it that he was elected for the first time and then re-elected again. Suddenly, this administration doesn't put that level of urgency and importance on this matter. But do you know what is happening today at the United Nations? The United Nations today, the Human Rights Council, the United Nations Human Rights Council, is shaming the United States today, saying that the police killings of black people are reminiscent of lynchings, and the government must do far more to protect them. Now, this comes out of a Reuters report from Geneva. This is an independent body that had accurately assessed the problem. And despite the fact that Obama would be making claims that he's done so much about it, they're saying, and they use the word, reminiscent of lynchings, and the government must do far more to protect black people. This is why we have a black president. And so you wonder, well, what is it that Barack Obama was missing and his Justice Department? And we have a new U.S. Attorney General, Loretta Lynch, who similarly seems unable to detect a pattern here, and who similarly is not as energized about this matter. duplicating her attitude when she was the U.S. attorney in the Eastern District in Brooklyn. This is how we have to begin putting the pieces together. The United Nations, this is a special group. They're called the UN Working Group of Experts on People of African Descent. They said, contemporary police killings and the trauma that they create are reminiscent of the past racial terror of lynching. Now, it is not ordinarily the case that a body, an international body, would use this kind of language. They tend to be more diplomatic about it. They would tend, you know, they don't want to inflame anybody's opinions about things. They tend to try to be neutral in their language. This body was not at all neutral. And today at the United Nations, they're not being neutral. And none of the Jesse Jacksons and the Al Sharptons and the lawyers who found no reason to formally file legal challenges to demand a special prosecutor. They just call news conferences and they yabber about it. There's no documentation that I have seen that they were prepared and still are prepared to go toe-to-toe for justice. They're interested in money. And they have now moved the equation further along the line that money is justice. A settlement is justice. All these tens of thousands of people and hundreds of thousands, if you count all those demonstrations that were going on all over the world in the aftermath of the killing of Michael Brown, not just about that specific case, but about what this UN group is talking about. Lynchings by police to a degree that concerns them as a major human rights crisis in America that must be solved. And the onus, they put the onus right where it belongs. The government must do more. So what happened to that great report that the group organized by the president himself, by executive order? It was a kind of a stunt. It's a sick joke to look as if you're responding, but you're not. You're just putting in on the record that you've done something, and you have people with their good reputations and good names and all their experience coming together, working feverishly to try and put something together that they said in their report, these things can be done right away. These things should start being done immediately. And it's important to note that the head of this group that was assembled was a police commissioner in Philadelphia. He said, these things could be done right away. These recommendations that we are making. Well, were they? And in the aftermath of a killing, now you have all the experts coming out and they're all dissecting this and dissecting that. But the problem is there is no structural change to that, and there is no challenge to the structural functioning of police departments across this country. Not really. It's on paper because a good group of people put it there. Finally. But it's not happening. And what President Obama is hoping to do is to kind of skate through the door with this undone, unfinished business handed over to whoever next will take office. I'm done. I've done everything. Look, I commissioned reports and, you know, the reports and reports and reports and reports. Eric Holder, as I said, delivered a report. We didn't ask for a report. We want justice. And you're the guy, you're the top justice guy. We want justice. You give us a report and you're out the door. You're back to earning a very nice salary at your old law firm, and you couldn't care less about what happens to this matter. Loretta Lynch, who replaced Eric Holder, and the Obama administration, they do not want any entanglement, national entanglement, with the police. They want to make it look like they're taking care of business, and they do so by, you know, not being personal about it. The president is removed from it by forming a group of people. It's now their job. You go out there and make a study of this, and you come up with some recommendations, and I will now say this is how I have addressed the issue, aggressively, proactively. But none of these things are going anywhere. And then recently, the president announced another study group, as if to say that the first group didn't quite do the job, but it actually was an excuse to deflect blame, to deflect criticism. All these things we need to put together and see what the picture is. When you have tragedies like this, you also have, and this is clearly an election year, the people who have been sycophants know that their time is running out. Whoever comes in will have a new group of sycophants, and they will be phased out. They have to remain relevant somehow. But their currency with the black community is so diminished as to be almost non-existent. But still, they somehow try to manage this as a public relations effort. And you see now the atrocity, the embarrassment of parading the mothers of the movement, women who have lost their sons, as if only women have lost their sons. Their husbands, the men in their lives, haven't lost anybody. And the women are going along with this because each of them has settled the case on the advice and counsel of their lawyers, who in turn were brought into these cases by Al Sharpton. Now, I'm not against settlements. They are, in fact, a provision of the law that people who are victims of a crime of a particular type, people who can show that they were harmed by the commission of a crime, can get compensatory and punitive damages. So I have no substantive problem with that at all. But we have to be very clear that this is not about settlements. At least this is not what it was represented as. These things, these events were represented as a need to mobilize in the interest of justice. In the interest of justice, which means beyond the business of sitting down and negotiating about money, how much money you're going to get. But advocating for and pursuing justice means that you are into getting the structural issues here addressed. You're into prosecutions of people who have done wrong. You're into getting sentences, definitive sentences, just like any other citizen would get for committing a crime of this nature. And it must be certain, the way it is for Black people generally, Latinos generally, certain. Justice is certain. But they stop right there at the settlement part. And all of this activity that they encourage, coming out in the street, bring your signs. Yes, we must have a peaceful march, but come on out and march for justice, which is only about increasing their leverage at the negotiation table for a settlement. And as I said, suddenly this case or these cases become private matters. And I say, we have to have a new standard now. Don't tell me about coming out in the street. Don't ask me to protest anything. Don't ask for my participation in any march unless we know for sure that you are interested in justice. We can see the evidence that you have filed papers seeking the appointment of a special prosecutor in each of these cases. Otherwise, I will be inclined to regard all of these matters, grave as they are, as your private concern. You're meeting in private, you're negotiating in private. And all you need is for me to get out there in the hot sun and bellow at empty buildings where the DA's office is to increase your currency with the people who own you. So I am not falling, I'm not going into this thing about the wailing mothers and the grieving families, because this has become an industry, and a very perverted one at that. All dignity is lost. And the ultimate goal is not even on the map. You have a right to settle. It's entirely up to you. But that is a private matter when you start settling, because here's what happens in the settlement. You have to agree to hold harmless the very people who killed your children. You have to agree to absolve the city and the police department and the police officers themselves from blame for killing your children. And if you can do that, and call it justice, I'm okay with saying, don't bother me. Deal with your stuff in private. Go away. And grieve in private with your 1.6 million or your 2 million that you got at the table. I tell you, this is a macabre industry that has been flourishing now for some time. The only exception that I could recall in recent years has been Alton Maddox, whose interest is justice, not settlement. We're fighting. We are taking on the system. He is the only attorney in the U.S., as far as I know, who has compelled the appointment of an independent prosecutor in two cases. It wasn't about settlements. And yet, you can still get your settlements without foregoing the ultimate and most important goal, which is justice. So I don't want to hear about showing up until we are very clear. Is this a private matter, or is this in the interest of all of us? If it is a private matter, you handle it in private. Do your private thing in private with all your private stuff. Don't come to me. Don't expect me to go out and buy a pair of sneakers so that I could march comfortably in the heat calling for justice when you're just calling for a settlement in which you and your clients will be holding harmless the very people who killed your children, who killed your husband. If that's the case, as the saying goes, include me out. Well, we take this short break, and we'll come back and talk about the carnival that is supposed to happen tonight. Right after this. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I am Eutrice Lead. Well, the first of three Q&A sessions, as I call them, I refuse to call these things debates, between the duopoly's presidential candidates takes place tonight at Hofstra University in New York. There's an inside joke there, but, you know, I would try to be objective. The inside joke, I can't resist it. You know, it's where Bernie Madoff graduated from. That should be very significant to both these people. It's being hyped like the Muhammad Ali, George Foreman superfight in 1974 in Kinshasa, Zaire. But here's the deal. Neither Hillary Clinton nor Donald Trump comes to the bout as a true people's champion. In fact, polls consistently show them to be despised and distrusted by voters. In 42 days, just the same, there'll be a winner, a new president, and it will be one of these despised and distrusted candidates. So, will tonight's so-called debate and the two others that are to follow fix the fix we're in? And what is the fix we're in? that we have to choose, at least this is the way they're saying it, that you don't have to go this way, but this is the way it's being propositioned. Choose either the lesser of two evils or the evil of two lessers. That's your choice this year. How do you feel about that? What do you think this so-called debate would do tonight, other than get huge ratings? And by the way, remember way back last year, I told you about keeping an eye on the role of campaign advertising on how this race is going to be covered, who gets favorable coverage, who does not. And it's all based on how much money they're spending. It's the advertising department that's calling the shots, not the editorial department of the news. Those people don't look to the editorial department anymore. The editorial instructions, that was a fortuitous slip. The editorial destructions are coming from increasingly from the law department, the lawyers upstairs, and from the advertising department about what they need to do to make money. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. What is your feeling about this thing tonight? Would it in any way influence your thinking about the choice of candidate or even whether you participate in the charade? I think it is a very fascinating thing that we have come to this point with clear biases on the part of the media and an absolute willful setting aside of everything that they editorially should be doing to inform the public about just what is at stake here and who these people are. That kind of journalism isn't being done at all. I mean, thorough investigation of these candidates. And oddly enough, the people who are still doing that work, for the most part, are conservative news outlets. They're doing a job, whether you agree with them or not. But at least there is some effort to decode these candidates, to expose the shenanigans they've been involved in, and to educate the public. This is very, very, very different. Jay from New York, what are you thinking?
Yes, good afternoon, Patrice. I totally agree with what you were saying earlier in regards to what's going on with the movement, the marching, and all of that nonsense. The only people that are getting paid is Al Sharpton, Benjamin Crump, and a few others. Now, in regards to tonight, it will be one of the finest dog and pony shows ever on TV. It will be like a wrestling match. It will be just absolutely buck wild. It is no telling what type of Donald Trump we may get. He may be calm, or he may be insane. He may treat Hillary like he treated Jeb Bush, Marco Rubio, and Ted Cruz. Because if he acts like that, the American people is gonna love it. That's what they're looking for. They want to see absolute madness. Hillary Clinton may be like Muhammad Ali, sticking and moving, jabbing, doing all the things she needs to do.
With a rope-a-dope
champion. It's going to be entertaining. And you know what? I'm not even going to watch because it's going to be an absolute waste of time. Now,
why would you say it would be entertaining? Why would it have to be entertaining? What is the plan in your view?
Because to me, this is what I was just getting ready to say. I think this may be to expose honestly if there was some inner workings between Trump and Hillary. If she basically baited him to run for office knowing that he had the type of showmanship that dumb Americans who back him would look for, and now it's time to cash in. I mean, that would be the only reason for me to look at it, because number one, and I'll say this to anyone, Donald Trump has no place whatsoever representing America on the world stage. Hillary Clinton is the same, but at least she has the breeding to be the president of the United States, knowing what we know about her. She does have the breeding. She was bred to do this job. Donald Trump has no inkling whatsoever on what he's doing. This is like you said months and months ago. This is a show. This is for him to be in the position to pull a Glenn Beck move and give him a channel on cable or something like that. You know, Eutrice, you're one of the most brilliant women in the world. You know as well as I do that he has no business on a global scale. And if America is that dumb to allow someone like him to get in office, all we can do is just try to survive the 4 years of him being in office and put together a plan to do a third party or to do something. Because there's no way anybody is going to convince me that that man has the right to be the president of this country. And I'm no fan of America, but I'm sorry. I can't see it. But hey, if this is what America wants, Eutrice, then this is what they have. But hey, it's going to be beautiful. It's going to be sticking and moving, jabbing, wrestling. How could it be intellectual? How could it? Imagine Donald Trump
Surprised. You may just be surprised. It may just be a very highly intellectual exchange tonight. You never know.
Then if it is, I'll leave you with this, Eutrice. If it is, then he fooled you. He fooled me, and he need to become the president of the United States.
Okay. Ed from Queens.
Have a good one.
Ed from Queens, what do you say? What do you think is going to happen tonight? And of what significance is this Q&A session to be, in your view? Ed from Queens.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Okay, no, I didn't know about it. I couldn't get any feedback. Yeah, how you doing, Eutrice?
Fine, thanks.
Basically, this is a political dog and pony show. I don't think it bears any relevance other than the undecided, because the people that have decided to vote for Trump are going to vote for Trump. The people that have decided they're going to vote for Hillary are going to vote for Hillary. Personally, my personal feeling is I don't think Trump should be president. I believe that the man has mental issues. I've done some social work with people with varying degrees of mental instability, and I'm not a clinician, but I think the man is an egoist. I think he's insane. Hillary isn't much better, but I got to hold my nose and vote for her, because I don't think Trump in that position would have any good for anybody, even motivating people to bring the revolution a little earlier, as it was. But we got to get out of these political dog and pony shows. This isn't even really a debate. It's just a question and answer session moderated by somebody who's afraid to even hold people accountable. So, but it's not a debate. It's not an exchange of ideas. It's not a dissection of your policies or your foreign or domestic. It's just a dog and pony show. People are already calling, you know, the way people are describing it, jabs and left and right. It's not a fight. This is not a WWE. These are supposed to be leaders of the democratic, quote-unquote, democratic process. So if we can't get anything but that out of this, then it's just another exercise in futility.
You're going to be watching tonight?
I don't know. Probably not. I mean, really. It's a toss-up. I love Monday Night Football, though.
Okay, well, that pretty much said it right there.
What we need to do is concentrate on local politics and movements. This is where the power comes from. This is where maybe in the next 8 years, 16 years, we won't have to deal with these two imbeciles. We'll have enough political power to actually have a movement that means something to the poor and working class of this country, that means something to the children of this country that means that, that can deal with the wealth gap, the income inequality. But that's what needs to concentrate on. Not every 4 years jump through hoops and look at these idiots go back and forth. The only way you can turn an ocean liner is slowly. If you don't turn it slowly, it'll capsize or the engines will burn out. So we got to start working on it. Got to start turning this ship of state slowly to the right. Because if we not to the right or the left, but to the correct direction. Because if we don't, we're not, you know, I don't know what's going to be here for the future. I really don't.
Thanks a lot for your input today. From Los Angeles, Ron, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning.
Hello.
I think yes, can you hear me?
Yes, but it sounds like you're on speakerphone.
Yeah, no, it's this is a direct line.
Okay.
I think I really appreciated your analysis on a lot of the victims of the police shootings. The families are, you know, getting all this blood money, and I think the community should really look at it, you know, the way you kind of broke it down. You know, I mean, that's all well and good for their individual situations, but, you know, as a collective, that's not good, because them getting their settlements is not, you know, real justice. And then particularly in the Mike Brown situation, you know, you had the Justice Department go in there and agree with the Kangaroo Court grand jury, where the main witness was a known racist and a liar, wasn't even there at the event, and that's the main thing they used in saying that this hands up, don't shoot never happened. Then you had a right wing media parrot that, and you know, it's like, well, you know, Mike Brown deserved to get killed, and he, you know, he didn't have his hands up because, of course, it was black witnesses, and then, you know, a black witness doesn't, they're not legitimate. You know, you have the same thing even in the Trayvon Martin, the black witness, not legitimate. So I think, again, your analysis was spot on. You know, we as a community do have brains. We do know how to count to 1,000 and do multiplication and division. So, you know, we should continue to, you know, think very critically, you know, like your presentation.
Well, thank you very much for your call today. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Alex from New Jersey, you're going to have to move a little fast. Alex? Is Alex on the line? Okay, we move on. Willie from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, my dear beloved sister. How are we?
We are fine.
We are fine today, very well.
We are fine. So what are you doing? Okay, you're watching this charade tonight, or?
Oh, no, my sister, no, not at all. See, I don't entertain and cooperate with certain things. I don't have a TV. So, no, this has been,
I mean,
20
okay,
years.
So I get it. You don't have a TV.
I don't entertain certain things, my sister. I'm very serious about my humanity. And to have a TV, it's an insult to my intelligence and decency. The American people, well, you know, I know you're going to watch it and you're going to be...
Oh, well, don't bet on that. I really don't.
No, what I'm saying... No,
would you believe?
What I'm saying.
I hate to
I know
tell
you're
you.
Wait. You're going to give it to us. You're going to break it down for us. So I don't need a TV. You see what I'm saying? I can't sit and watch it. Because I know you're going to break it down in simple terms so we could understand it. I can't waste my time with stuff
well,
like
the
that.
Only reason that, you know, sometimes these things are very important to watch only because the things that we have discussed, it's a learning tool in that you would see elements play out of the things that we discussed. I mean, this is not, they're not that deep. You could pretty much predict how this would go. But it is something also to see the actuality of what we discuss as, or what we have discussed as theoretical. You know, the environment, how the set, the design of the set and the questions and the behaviors of the candidates and so forth. These things are very important because don't forget, it is mass mass influence that's going on here. And
I understand that. I'm very clear on that. Mm-hmm. I'm very clear on that. Minister Farrakhan, a couple of years ago, he did a lecture on dumbing down of the American people. And I watched this thing play out 20 years ago. And I'm saying, wow, my God, you control the Congress. Now you're going for the White House. You're done. Your country has been taken. Simple.
Mm-hmm.
Your country has been taken. Because those who control media, they have no interest in this country. They have no interest in it. So your country has been taken, dummy. I love you, my sister. Peace.
Thanks, Willie, for your call today.
Love you,
tell you, it's important, you know, I get it. I understand exactly what he's saying. But you also want to, you know, we discuss things as part of our media literacy. And these things are very important to observe, if only for the fact that you say, my gosh, this is the theory put into practice. And you could spot it right away. They're not that complex. They're not that complicated. They're very obvious. But it's sometimes worth it to actually observe this yourselves with your own eyes. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Meditations and Molotovs. I like that. I love the title of that show, with Vincent Emanuele. You can reach me at leadstories, L-E-I-D, stories, at gmail.com. A great program planned for you tomorrow, so be here and tell somebody about it. That PRN is where you go every day. See you tomorrow. Bye-bye.